Good evening, and salute to all my listeners out there. This is our podcast called This Thing Called Life. But we're going to be talking about everyday trials and tribulations that come up during life. My name is Sir Johnson, and I'm here with my co-host, Sweet T. What up, Sweet T?
Hey, y'all. I'm so excited to be here and be with Sir Johnson as we have the conversation about life. We all know that life is lifing a whole lot. And sometimes we just need a time to get off the world and digest and process everything that's going on, from relationships to love, marriage, divorce, depression, addiction recovery, work-life balance, and a lot more. Raising kids, you know. From A to Z, we want to just give you a space to listen, hear, and observe, and maybe even dialogue later about this thing called life. So I'm excited about it. This is our first show, and we have a very, very special guest who has successfully navigated this thing called life and all of the challenges that life has thrown at him. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And he's here today to share that with us and with our listening audience. So who do we have here today, Sir Johnson?
We have my main man, Keith, out of Memphis. So what up, Keith? How you doing today?
What's happening, brother Sir Johnson? How you feeling, man?
I'm all right, man. We, you know, doing this podcast, this thing called life, and we in the land of the living, so I can't complain too much. You came highly recommended. I have done your show also, and I think what you're doing in the community is wonderful, man. And, you know, I say no better way to start my podcast than having you as a guest. So it's a wonderful privilege to have you here, man.
Man, it's glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what you do and what got you into helping people with this recovery thing?
Well, sure. I mean, so for starters, Keith Bird is president of Recovery Out Loud, which is a nonprofit that we started to offer some post-rehabilitation support to some people that have made it to the recovery part after a treatment. And, you know, right now, currently working at the Shelby County Health Department in the HIA, which is the high-impact areas of opioids. So we just wake up every day looking for ways to be better and ways to reach back into the fire and pull somebody out. So that's what we're here today doing.
Okay. That's awesome, man. Addiction is a big thing, especially with the opioid crisis going on right now. And I think that's wonderful that you're helping people and reaching out. What are some places that people can go or call if they have issues and they want to try to get clean?
Well, so here in the state of Tennessee, or at least in Memphis in the Shelby County area, people with no insurance at all can always call places like CAPS, places like, what's the other one? Not Divine, but there's CAPS, which is free. There is, should have had my list, the Harbor House. No, it's cool. The Harbor House, which is also free. And there's a couple more. We'll try to get them name drop before the end of the show.
Okay. I was just thinking about the root problem. Everybody wants to talk about addiction and how we can help the problem. But I was wondering if we could save people from turning to drugs, because a lot of times it seems like it's always the underlying issue that make people turn to drugs most of the time.
I could agree to that. I would say, and statistically or scientifically proven, we believe that it is going to always be unaddressed trauma. whether, okay, yeah, you know, no matter where it stemmed from, childhood, young adulthood, sometimes even in adulthood, but it's going to be some type of unaddressed trauma. For the most part, which is going to be that that underlying condition that you're speaking of. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel comfortable sharing, like, how you initially turned to a life of drugs? Or, I mean, you seem like you had a decent upbringing. And, I mean, did something happen and it just kind of rocked your world? I mean, if you care to share.
So, I'm not a finished product. The thing that I do perfect today is I don't get high no more. Some of the things that I'm working on still is uncovering what did this thing go wrong? Because when I reflect over my life, things were going pretty good. Until they weren't going good no more. You know...
Was it like financial? Was it relationships? Was it just I can't find a job, or just a lot of things at one time?
All in all, if I could simplify it, what I would say is people like me more than I like myself. I think most days that I woke up, I was a pretty pleasant guy. I could even go back to high school when I would win stuff like class favorite and stuff like that. So for the most part, people liked me. But I don't think I liked what I was seeing as much as others did. I don't think I was ever okay with the skin that I was in. Always looking for ways to to fit in when I already fit in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So when I say I'm not a finished product, I'm still doing the work. Tomorrow will be 2 years clean for me.
For,
appreciate that.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
It seems like a lot longer because of some of the work that we've been blessed to be able to put in. But it's only been 2 years, and this is a lifelong journey. So it's not like I'm done with it, right? We still working.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I, you know, I will say on some level, everybody has something that they struggle with.
Right? Yeah.
So some people is drugs. Some people is lust, sex, you know, maybe kind of a perverted sex, or, you know what I mean? Just not just sex, but
perverted, just PDD sex.
Yeah. Just doing too much. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. Like, why you need all that?
Yeah.
You know, but. And some people food, you know, just everybody struggles with something. But I agree with you, just getting down to the root cause of it. And, you know, you, Keith, seem like, yeah, everyone likes you. You're popular. You know, so I guess an example of, even though it may seem like the world loves us, sometimes it's that inner turmoil that we have that if we don't have things in place to address it can kind of eat us from the inside out. And so, you know, I've never had a drug problem, but I guess in terms of me trying to navigate this thing called life, me learning certain tools such as like meditation, you know, having my quiet time, not doom scrolling so much, having a faith-based center, being able to talk about things that I thought were shameful, you know, being able to open up about certain things actually helped me. And then also learning the signs of when I am in a, I'll say emotional crisis. Okay. So when I'm nervous or upset or scared or hurt, or you get what I'm saying? And so I'm thinking, like, for men, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys are kind of raised to, I don't know if the word is subjugate, but to push down your feelings, right? Like, don't cry and don't, you know, get up, you know, get over it type. And do you think that plays a part? Now, I'm not saying everybody should be crying all over the place. I'm not saying that. But do you think, looking back, that there should have been a better outlet? And I'm also asking you, Sir Johnson, for being able to express like your hurt and disappointment and, you know.
I think, go ahead, Sir Joe, Sir Johnson.
Nah, I was just saying, for sure, it needs to be some kind of outlet for things of that nature. And a lot of people turn to different addictions for that. But I would like to say addiction, any addiction, doesn't have any particular preference. You could be rich, poor, white, black, ugly, green. It doesn't even matter. Everybody has suffering from some kind of addiction. And from what I've learned about it is sometimes you don't even recognize the trauma you're in. It starts as a fun thing or just as a party person. You going out, you getting high, you getting drunk, and it starts off as being cool and fun. And you don't even realize that it's become an addiction until it's an addiction, until things start falling apart, especially with that opiate, until you get sick and your body needs it, and then it's a whole different ball game. So having someone to talk to in different outlets, I think is very valuable when it comes to addiction. And as far as men being taught to suppress their feelings, oh, sure. We're not supposed to cry. We're not supposed to show any vulnerability. We're supposed to have our head up, chest out, no matter what. So sometimes we do depend on substances or different things to have that outlet because we don't want to show no vulnerability to our significant others, to our children, even to our friends. You know, you don't want to look like a sucker to your boys. So you really sometimes is not a safe space to talk about your emotions and your feelings.
Yeah, and you know, I think just coming up as children, the school system doesn't really teach about, I don't know if maybe they do now, but how to handle your emotions. You know, they help you identify, this is mad, this is sad, this is angry, this is, you know, but in terms of like, what is depression and, you know, or what is, you know, maybe how to meditate or quiet time, or how do you handle conflicts? How do you disagree respectfully with someone? You know what I mean? And I don't see where they taught that. I mean, were y'all taught that in school, how to conflict resolution or anything? Because, I mean, I think that's why some of these young guys are out here just, you know, argument, pistol, you know, get the chopper. That's all we hear, you know.
Hey, I think those guys, as they call me, the YNs is doing it. I don't think they're going to school at all anyway.
Yeah.
But now I think the school systems are probably doing a better job now, mm-hmm. because I hear kids say stuff like, I need a mental health day.
Okay.
You know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But when I was coming up, probably not. I can't recall a time a teacher sit down and ask me how I felt, or ask me, you know, hey, this looks like maybe something going on at home, or, you know, it was mostly always, if it was a one-on-one with a teacher, it's probably some type of disciplinary action going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling your mama. You know what I'm saying? That might be the person that got me feeling this way. You know what I'm saying? And that's who you call him. You know what I'm saying? So, but today, I think as the mental health conversation becomes more normalized, then the schools do address it. Mm-hmm. Because the kids that I help support and help raise, you know, the teachers, they calling me up, you know what I'm saying? So we trying to stay on top of stuff like that. It was something that Sergio was speaking on. He said, like, we ain't supposed to cry and, mm-hmm. You know, to show our emotions. And I don't really remember if that was something that I was told or it was just something that was just kind of understood, because that's just how we were as young men. And I didn't realize how unhealthy that was until I was well into adulthood,
mm-hmm.
like well into adulthood. Mm-hmm. So now I try to talk as much as I can, especially to who I need to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask y'all this question right here, right? Mm-hmm. Since we're talking about emotions, So this is me playing devil's advocate. I think it's a thin line, because if we're going to teach kids that emotions, you know, it's healthy to talk about this and talk about that, and I think that's right, but it's also a thin line because the real world doesn't care how you feel. You can't say, well, I'm not going to work today because I got in an argument with my wife. No, your boss ain't going to care how emotional you are. You got to come to work. So my question is, how do we draw the line between being vulnerable and dealing with our emotions and also telling people you can't always go on how you feel, because how you feel sometimes might not be the right thing. If somebody smack you, you might feel like smacking them back, but is that the right thing or the right place? If somebody disrespect you, you might feel like shooting them, but you know that's not the right thing. So how do we decipher how we feel from the real world where they really don't care about your feelings, they just want the task done at hand?
Okay, I'll start. Well, I think, this is just my opinion, the key is maybe having an arsenal of ways to handle and process your emotions. So, you know, if you have an argument with your spouse, okay, and you don't feel like going to work, no, but maybe going in your car, listening to whatever that song is that calms you down, maybe taking a moment to journal, you know, calling your sister or your brother and crying and, you know, venting, getting off your chest while you're driving to work, you know, get it together and then go to work and do your work. So I just think, because for me, I didn't have any tools whatsoever other than pray, right? So I still pray. I still believe God, love Jesus, the Bible, all of that. But, you know, some it's like you need prayer and other things. Like the Bible said, the faith without works is dead. OK, so I'm not minimizing prayer, but, you know, people blow you off and say, oh, just pray about it. God got you. And he does. But at the same time, in, you know, I need to have those tools myself to, you know, process my emotions. And I just, until I started going to like therapy and different places that helped me understand. And then they kept saying, well, you know, maybe you need a journal. Maybe you need a journal. I'm like, eh, I don't want to write. I don't feel like writing. Right. But then I got so bottled up one time and I was into my emotions. I was like, you know what? Let me just write something down. Right. Let me just write this letter to, you know, and then ball it up and throw it in trash. And then when I did it, I felt better. And I'm like, oh, OK. So this really does work. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, I think that's the fine line. Now, let me ask you, Keith, if you feel open enough to say it, like when you get to a moment where you're feeling overwhelmed, like what do you do to get yourself back in order?
Acceptance. Acceptance for me is key. What acceptance means to me is this. If I'm bothered, if I'm angry, or if I'm anxious, it's something in me that's not accepting you, a place or a thing, to be exactly the way that it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It's something in me that wants to either change it or control it.
Right.
And if I want to change it or control it, I'm not accepting it. Once I learned the only thing that I run is me, a lot of stuff just started rolling off my back like the water on the duck.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Acceptance has been one of the biggest tools that I have used in my recovery to just be okay no matter what.
Right. So use an example of arguing with your spouse, okay? So are you saying your system is to say, hey, we had this disagreement, I can't do nothing about it, I'm just going to go to work?
So an argument for me is like this. If I'm arguing with you, my objective more than likely is to, by the end of this conversation or this argument, to get you to think like me. So I'm already saying I don't accept your viewpoint. I'm already saying I don't accept the way your perception about life is. Mm-hmm. I'm not even thinking about what happened to you as a child, what happened to you between your mama, what happened to you. I'm not thinking about none of that. All I'm saying is the life that you lived up to this point, right now, you should think the way that I do. Mm-hmm. I never knew that's what I was doing before when I was arguing. I thought it was just an argument, right?
Right.
So my the tool, like I was saying, is, well, I got to accept. I don't have to agree with it, but I have to accept that at this point in your life, this is how you see things.
Right.
And then I just go on about my day. Now, sometimes it don't work, but when it doesn't, when I don't apply that tool, that's because I didn't get outside of my character. I'm not being true to who I said I was going to be. Mm-hmm. Because this is a practice tool, and because I know more about street life, because I know more about getting high than living sober, sometimes I revert to old ways and I get argumentative and mm-hmm. I get aggressive. And I'm like, hold up, this ain't the way that we said we was going to live. So Keith, why are you so upset? Well, you ain't accepting something. Mm-hmm. And once I process that, then I can check myself. Mm-hmm. But I got to constantly check myself mm-hmm. because I only been living this way for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I still act a fool if I ain't careful.
Mm-hmm. And for me, kind of similar, I had to learn not to take everything so personal.
You right? know why? Because nothing's personal.
Right, yeah.
Nothing is personal.
Yeah. And, you know, I felt like somebody said they said it against me. You did that to me, you know. And so it kind of built up and built up. And it's like, yeah, no, maybe they're going through something. Maybe this, maybe that. I had to come up with different scenarios that it wasn't an attack
Man,
on me.
Man, nothing's personal. When people pass yeah. away, I hear a lot of people say, I can't believe you did this to me. I'm like, they gone. Mm-hmm. They didn't do nothing to you. Mm-hmm. No matter how it made you feel, it's not about you. As humans, as me, I can only speak for me. I want to make everything about me.
Right. One thing we all do. Yeah, we live in a society that is, you know, the breakups. You know, you move on. You talking about what they did to you. You know, he hurt me. He's on, you know, you ain't tell no side. You slash ties and bust windows and, you know, going through their phone. All. You know what I'm saying? You want, oh, he, you know.
And it'll rob you of your peace.
Oh, yeah.
It'll rob you of your peace.
One thing I learned about emotional intelligence for myself is when I used to get angry a lot, I realized that I'm angry because someone is not doing what I want them to do, so I'm punishing myself. Because when I'm angry, I'm mad. I'm not at peace. I'm not happy. I can't, you know what I mean? And whoever I'm angry with, they going on about their day. They're not even thinking about it no more. So I decided not to punish myself as much and try not to be angry because someone is not receiving what I'm putting down the way that I would like them to.
And you know what? And seeing my side of it, seeing the role that I played no matter what, even if I'm wronged. I'm going to give you an example. When I started to go back over my life, and like, what led me to addiction? What's some of the things that I didn't probably deal with? One of the things that popped up was I had a friend that I considered the best friend that fell on hard times. I let him move in with me. And then I later found out that him and my long-term girlfriend was messing around. So I'm like, dang, you fucking my girl. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the first thing I want to do is, man, you supposed to be my man, man. You ain't supposed to do nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to a sponsor because sometimes this is what happens when you talk to the right people. You have to speak to people about what's going on with you because they can see stuff that you can't about yourself. To me, it's, man, this nigga did me wrong.
Right.
But to him, he like, hey, tell me the story. What was going on? Why was he living with you in the first place? Where was you at when they was, oh, well, I was selling dope. Oh, well, I was gone 2-3 days at a time, but still, all he's supposed to do was stay in his room and play the game. Well, was she? Yeah, she's called me about 20 times. I didn't answer because I was doing my thing. Well, Keith, you know, well, what role did you play? Well, you was gone. You had hoes out in the streets. You left for her there. He didn't have no car. He was stuck there. So now that I'm able to see the role that I played in everything, it ain't always so bad because I could have done some things wrong. It don't matter what it is. I can always check myself now and say, well, what role did you play? But I'm going to tell you the flip side of this. Everybody ain't looking for ways to be better.
Right.
So sometimes it's frustrating because no matter what happens between me and you,
right,
I can see the role that I played. But you might not be working on yourself. So sometimes I have to accept that I'm going to always be, it's going to feel like, man, seem like I'm always saying I'm messing up because I'm working on myself every day. But the reason I'm working on myself is not because I'm a better person than you. I'm working on myself because my life depends on it. Because when I don't work on myself, I end up cooking up a white substance with baking soda in the bathroom and smoking it. Mm-hmm. But see, you don't get the same problem. You don't got the same. You got the luxury of just taking off and chilling. Nah, I can't do that. I have to keep my foot on my own neck. Mm-hmm. Because the time that I lit up, I end up walking up and down Sycamore View with no shoes on my feet.
And, you know, something somebody brought to my attention once is we deal with people the way we are, okay? Or we see people the way we, through our color glasses. And so, for example, you know, if I like Sprite, right? Mm-hmm. You come over to my house. I'm going to say, hey, you want a Sprite? Or if I like alcohol, you know, hey, you want a drink? Or if I watch movies, hey, you want to watch a movie? Right? Because that's what I enjoy. That's what I like doing. And so sometimes we deal with people the way we are. And so it's easy to get offended because that person has handled us in a way that we would not have handled ourselves or we would not have handled them, right? Instead of seeing them for who they are and that's them and not take that personal. That makes sense?
Right.
And so that leads in also into like forgiveness. You know, we talk about, you know, how people do stuff to us, but to what extent does unforgiveness kind of eat at us, right? So to what extent did that encounter with your friend and the girlfriend, like, did that eat you up? Like, did you meditate on that? Did you plot, I'm going to get them back? Did that lead you to get high because you were hurt? Or were you, I mean, how did you process all of that? Or is it like after you got sober, you were like, man, I...
Yeah, but see, I found out when I was still in addiction. He had about two baby mamas. I was gonna knock both of them down, but I didn't do it because
revenge.
Because that's look, man, that's where my worldly mind took me to. Then they was kind of feeling like they were jocking on me anyway, right. So it wasn't gonna be too hard. It probably bothered me more than him. You know why? Because he didn't even know that I knew. Mm-hmm. So if he don't know that I knew, she done told me this. So he like, man, why did my man acting funny? Well, because I know, you know what I'm saying, what's going on. But it always, when you harbor stuff like that, man, it don't matter who you are. It's going to always affect you more than the person that was vindictive towards you. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why it's so good. It was so good for me to clean my closet. I don't want to be harboring nothing. I'm carrying around your mess now. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, I gotta keep my side of the street clean. Mm-hmm. Once I seen, I'm telling you, man, it was a golden nugget. Once I learned that one little phrase, Keith, what part did you play in it? What was your role in it? You can't tell me you didn't have a role in this. You got a role in everything that happened in your life. Mm-hmm. Care what it is. Let me give you an example. You sitting at a red light, somebody rear-end you. Your attorney say, well, what happened? You say, well, I was sitting at the red light, somebody just rear-ended me. But the real story is the light turned green. You didn't see it because you was texting. Mm-hmm. Even though this person ran into the back of you, what role did you play in it? Mm-hmm. Had you pulled off on time, would it have happened?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always a challenge for us to see that we're not perfect. Even though we know we're not perfect, we still feel like our decisions sometimes are always the right decision. And that's just not true. And so, you know, as we navigate life, that's something to be mindful of. So I guess my question is, and I know they have to hit rock bottom or whatever, but somebody that's wrestling with an addiction, now looking back, like what is the thing that you think you would want them to know, I guess, in hindsight? I mean, when you were at your lowest point, was there anything that somebody could have said to you to make you, you know, wake up a little bit? Either one of y'all.
No.
So it was nothing that somebody could have said that would have made me stop in my tracks. But that don't mean that the seeds that they was planting, some of them weren't sticking and some of them weren't sprouting. It's like, it just took a bunch of seeds to be planted. But it was nothing that somebody could have just came and said to me and it would have been a magical moment, I don't think, because even the tears from my mama eyes wasn't enough. It's a certain amount of pain that I had to feel. I can't describe the pain. because it wasn't always monetary, it wasn't physical. It was just self-worthlessness. I had to feel so low and so much internal pain, like hell on earth. And I had to know that the only way that this pain will stop is if I stop putting this stuff in my body. Because, you know, my story was from heroin to, you know, Percocet to heroin to fentanyl. So the fentanyl caused you this weird numbness to whether you either sleep or you're just not feeling nothing all the time, but you're still stuck in the addiction. But once I started smoking cocaine, my eyes was big and I felt everything all day from sun up to sundown, and the crystal meth wasn't no different. So this pain here, you ain't sleeping through this. You finna feel every bit of it. And I wanted it to stop. I wanted it to stop. It wasn't about being broke because I had money when I was getting high, and I was broke getting high, but I had different phases. So it just, but man, when I tell you that pain got so bad and I had tried everything else. I had, man, look, holy water had been sprinkled on me. They had knocked me down in the church. They hit me in my forehead so hard. I promise you they did. They picked me up, passed, and say, hit him again. Hey, look, because they knew that boy needed. Man, and he would tell you, better fall out, boy. And I'll fall out. And they hit me, man. I look. But it wasn't until I said, look, man, okay, God, I'm finna work with you. I'm finna quit working against you. I know they say you got all power, but at the same time, you waiting on me to make the move. And once I just took a little step, man, God's grace just showed up. But I had to start moving in the right direction.
So when you had your moment, like, okay, this is it right here, did you cry out to God? Or, I mean, what do you remember of that?
I have been crying out to God so much. See, the last stages of addiction, when it get real dark, you start talking to God a lot for me. And other addicts, when I talk to them, it's like the same. We all get to that point where we know it's coming to the end. Either we finna die or we finna quit. Mm-hmm. We know that. I had made peace with dying plenty of times. But so the conversation with God went something like this. When you ready, I'm ready. That's what he would tell me. So when I was ready, it wasn't that one last big old prayer. It was like, okay, all the stuff you've been telling me, all right, it's time now. And I don't tell this part of the story to a lot of people because I don't want to deter people. I don't want them to try to do it the way that I did it. But the last time I got clean, I didn't go to rehab. I don't tell a lot of people that because then they hear me and they say, well, I don't got to go to rehab. But I had already been to rehab 7 times. So I had already learned about my addiction. I learned about what I was dealing with. So, and see, another thing is I wasn't coming off an opioid. I wasn't coming off fentanyl. Once I got clean, I had only been smoking crack for 2 years. The difference between crack and fentanyl, there's no physical dependence. There's no physical dependence on crack cocaine. It's all mental. You crave it, you want it, but you're not going to be sick. You're not going to vomit. You're not going to boo-boo on yourself. So when I just woke up, I would never forget. I was sleeping in a parking lot at McDonald's inside of my camera. I used to sleep at McDonald's because I could stay on their Wi-Fi and use my phone because my phone was off. And I woke up, I texted my girl, I said, man, I'm ready to come home. She said, well, you can come as long as you quit smoking dope. And I said, I love you, I'm on the way. And I never did drugs a day again in my life. But I'm not saying it was that easy.
Right, of course.
I fought tooth and nail until I just got my breakthrough. But some people don't make it to that point. Everybody think they got time. Everybody think they got time. And the biggest lie, we just don't know how much time we got, especially with this fentanyl, this opioid epidemic.
All right. Sir Johnson, you feel comfortable sharing, like, how did God, if at all, play a part in your recovery or your rock bottomness? Like, do you remember reaching out to God, or was it after?
Well, God played a major role, if not the whole role, in my situation because he spared me. I lost a lot of people. My best friend, the mother of my children, and other friends all passed away, and I was spared. Like Keith was saying, you have to sometimes hit every person is not the same. For some people, you do have to hit rock bottom. So the only way to go is up. For me, my life was almost taken. My kidney shut down. I was on death's door in the ICU. I was in the hospital for at least 30 days. I was on dialysis after that for 3 years. And then I got the call, and I'm a kidney recipient. I have a kidney transplant, and I'm doing well. And that's all through the grace of God and His mercy. But sometimes your pain becomes your purpose. Sometimes you think that if things are not going your way, that it's not a blessing. And sometimes it not going your way, or you suffering from addiction, can ignite your purpose. God knows what He's doing. Keith wouldn't be who Keith is today if he didn't have the addictions he went through, the struggles he had. He has a testimony because he passed the test. Like he said, he's still a work in progress, and so am I. But sometimes God takes you through things, because I believe experience is the best teacher. You have a lot of people who went to school and learned about recovery and can teach you what the books say. But it's nothing like a person who has firsthand experience that's been on both sides of the fence and is now on the other side of the fence, that can not only inspire you through their words, but through their actions, where they can say, hey, I've been there, done that, and look at me now, and you can do it too. So I think, and I thank God for everything that I've been through, that I'm going through, because it's helping me become the person that I am today. Sometimes God got to sit you down. And sometimes that's why I feel like people go to jail. Sometimes God got to sit you down, sit you in a room, and talk to you and let you know what's it about. But He also sometimes lets you go through things so you can learn and you can reach out and be amongst the people, because you were one of the people. So, yeah, addiction is real. And I also want to say this. God uses addicts, because addicts are some of the best hustlers. And the most loyal and go-getting people that you will ever find. I mean, when you are addicted, that's adding something to your life. When you want something so bad that you go get it by any means necessary, once you pass the test and you get on the right path, you'll be addicted to doing right, addicted to helping people, addicted to getting the message out there, addicted to just improving everybody around you as yourself. So I think that's why God uses people like myself, people like Keith, that He know gonna go hard for him, and that appreciate what He did and what He saved us from. And back to what you were saying about forgiveness, one of the things I had to do is, yeah, forgive a lot of other people. I've been through situations like Keith was talking about, girls cheating and all that. But the main thing, I had to forgive myself for the bad choices I made, the mistakes I made. So I want to ask you, Keith, when was it that you said, you know what, I'm going to stop beating myself up. I can't do nothing about the past. I can do something about my present and my future. And when did Keith forgive Keith for the mistakes he made and decided to move on and get this thing popping the right way?
Or has Keith forgiven Keith?
Yeah, so I gotta be careful with that, because some days I feel like I ain't forgiving myself, and then some days I feel like I have. But no matter what, I just don't use. Matter what I'm dealing with now, I just don't use drugs and alcohol as a solution. So I'm continuing to work, man. It's a lot of work that got to be done. It's, man, you're looking at over 30 years of damage, 30 years of suppressing feelings, 30 years of lies, 30 years of deceit, just not knowing who I really was, and just clouded judgment, disconnect from God. So we just constantly put one foot in front of the other, and trying to figure this thing out the best way that I can.
So what do
you think called life? That's what we doing.
Yeah. What do you? Because I know I think we a few minutes left. What do you all need from your support circles to help you through this process?
Understanding. For me, it's understanding. And the reason I say that is because once I got clean, or once the people get clean, the people, he made it. And they really don't understand that it's a daily reprieve. Mm-hmm. They really feel like you come so far, there's no way that he can go back. Mm-hmm. People don't understand that anything that we've been able to achieve in whatever amount of time, it can all fit in the bottle or fit on the pipe. And it can be gone in the blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. You know, just understanding that we are work in progress. You know, that's what I would ask.
Mm-hmm. You agree with that, Sir Johnson?
Oh, yeah, totally. For me, and also patience. I think patience is vital, because just like you just said, it's years of turning yourself down, years of lying, stealing, drug abuse and all that. So in order to hit rock bottom, it took years. So just because you've been clean, and this is for my support system, just because somebody's clean for a couple years here and there, it's only been a couple years. So for them to reach the level that you want them at, far as careers and stuff like that, it's not going to happen overnight. Like, you know, I've been through surgeries. Just like I said, it's been a year since I had a kidney transplant. I've been clean, and I'm on the right path. But I'm not there yet. Just like it took years for me to destroy myself, it's going to take years for me to get to the point that I want to get. So sometimes people see you clean and you're doing the right thing and expect you to have the world or be all the way top tier on what they think you should be. And if you're not meeting their expectations, you know, you still sometimes might feel like a failure. But nah, be patient. God not through with me yet. Like you said, I'm still a work in progress.
All right. I have one more question before we kind of move towards wrapping things up. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's been said that people that, you know, get high or drug addicted, or like they're chasing a high or chasing the next high, or they had the first high and then they're trying to get it back. Do you agree with that statement, or do you feel like you were chasing something else other than a high? And if so, what was that?
You know, I don't think there's a definite yes for me. Was I chasing something? I don't even know if I really knew what I was chasing. For the most part, it was just the numbness. It was a detachment. It was a sense of just feeling invisible. I felt like when I hit dope, couldn't nobody see me. And a lot of people probably feel that way, because you hear stuff, people say stuff like, you can't, if you don't even know me, you can't even tell I get. I'm like, yes, I can. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, and then again, they changed the game with the fentanyl, with the opioids, because you physically dependent now. So even if you don't want it no more, if you wake up in the morning and say, you know what, I ain't doing this shit no more, I'm done with it. You mean it. At that moment, if you take a lie detector test, you will pass it. But you don't know at 1 o'clock, their stomach going to get the boil and them legs going to get the locking up, their booty going to get loose, and you're going to be like, man, let me call this man one last time. And before you know it, you done hit the dope, and now you got what they call the fuckers. Fuck it, I start over tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Man, you look up and 3-4 years done went past, and you've been starting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Or you die in the midst of all the madness. I don't know what you think, Sergio.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that it's different drugs, and they have different outcomes. So far as like crack, they said people that smoke crack, you are chasing a high because it's never enough.
Okay, not to cut you out. Let me say this real quick. The first time I smoked crack, I knew that that's really the drug that I've been looking for my whole life. Really? I knew. It was beyond a shit. I'm like, I've been wasting my time. But that is what a drug. Okay. What you just said is absolutely correct. That's one you chase. That's one you chase. Right. Since I've been clean, that's the only thing. That's the only drug I didn't have thought about. And I done them all. But that one will creep up on you. That's why I had to quit vaping, because when I used to hit my vape, it used to give me flashbacks. When I seen big clouds of smoke come out of my mouth, mm-hmm. it give me flashbacks of hitting pipes. So I had to quit all of it. Mm-hmm. Yep. Go ahead, Sergio.
That's why it's so many different types of drugs and so many mm-hmm. types and addictions. Okay. How can I say this? Those are different weapons. So if you got 99 weapons and it's one person, they gonna go for one of them.
Yeah.
Whether it's the food, mm-hmm. sex,
yeah,
whatever it is, all these weapons are being thrown at you constantly, day by day. You gonna fall to one. That's why I have so many different drugs. For me, I had an addiction to opiates. Like you said, I've tried damn near them all. But my drug of choice, like you said, crack was your drug of choice. Mine was the opiates. Why? Because opiates is nothing but a pain drug. They use fentanyls before surgery. I remember going to get a surgery and hearing the doctor say, hey, 20 cc's of fentanyl. And I was like, hey, man, what you know? You know? And they like, no, that's surgery, for real. So that's a painkiller. And I was in so much pain looking back that's the drug of choice I like, because it was a total numbness. You do your little drug, you nod off, you content, you ain't chasing nothing. And I thought, for real, that I was better than the crackhead, because the crackhead gonna spend $200 if they got $200 that day. I could spend my little $20 in the morning and I'm good all day. You know what I mean? That was my mentality, when none of them are better than any of them. But the question she asked, as far as the chasing, yeah. But see, it's a gift and a curse with both of them, where you might chase crack all day. When you wake up in the morning, you was able to wake up at the McDonald's and say, hey, I'm done with it, drive home and be done with it. Where somebody that was on the opioids gonna wake up in the morning and, just like you said, say, hey, I don't want it. But when they get the bubble guts and be in cold sweats, one minute you hot, one minute you cold, and you shivering and your bones aching, you going to get that. So they all have their ups and downs. But I think overall, it's a numbness. Somebody, you know, when you first try it or you get high, it's a numbness. You got some kind of pain or something that you're going through.
All right. Okay. Well, if we could wrap this thing up with one final thought from each of us, I'll go first. I'll say to the listeners out there, when we navigate this thing called life, we all wrestle with something. We've all encountered mm-hmm. something. We've all been disappointed by something, hurt by someone, hurt by some things in life. And if we're not careful, it may lead us down a road to exploration of something to numb the pain, right? And for the other, my co-host today, it actually happened to be a drug addiction, but for others, it may be alcohol, it may be sex, it may be you're working out too much. I don't know, just some type of addiction that if too much of a good thing, right, goes the wrong way, and we're really wrestling and fighting against ourselves. And I just want to encourage those out there to find other ways to, I guess, vent, seek therapy, pray, go to God, talk to your friends, and just reach out if you need help. It's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I need help. Just want to encourage everybody that you're not alone. We're mm-hmm. here for you. I think as part of his closeout, Keith is probably going to tell you how to contact him and his organization, and also how mm-hmm. you can give to his organization, because there's a lot of work to be done in the community. But in this thing called mm-hmm. life, stay strong, stay encouraged. We got your back. Sir Johnson, mm-hmm. anything you want to say?
Oh, for sure. I think that every day that God graces us with waking up, we got two things. He gives us a chance and a choice. Another chance to live and a choice to do the right thing. So don't waste your chance. Don't waste your choice. We are here to support anybody. I want to thank our listeners for this thing called life. I want to leave y'all with love. And all things are possible. So, in the words of my cousin, stay up.
That's right. All right, Keith, close us out.
To the addict that's still suffering, this is one of them things that just ain't made to do alone, man. And the help is definitely out there. And I say this, if you can't find the help, it's probably because you're not really ready for the help. Because I'm a firm believer that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Mm. So don't be playing with this thing because it ain't playing with you. Mm-hmm. Do something about your condition unless your condition will do something about you. And to the person that's supporting the addict, remember that if love was one of them things that you could use to love an addict back out of addiction, it wouldn't be a drunk person on the street. It wouldn't be a person walking up and down the street talking to themselves, because everybody's somebody's child and everybody got somebody that love them. Mm-hmm. Love just ain't enough. That person just got to want it for themselves. Mm-hmm. And don't hurt yourself or be hurt in the process, because we addicts have been known to destroy families and pull everything connected to us down with it. You got to learn when to cut ties and let God be God, because we just ain't him. You can reach me on Facebook at Keith Burgess. It's KEITHBURGESS. We are Recovery Out Loud, the Don't Die Main movement. We say don't die, man, because addicts just can't recover. You got to stay alive, give yourself a fighting chance. If you want to donate, $ Don't Die Main. It's DONTDIEMANE. I love you. I love everybody.
All right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And we're out.